U.S. forces launch fresh Iran strikes while Rubio previews nuclear accord within days. And number 10,022, takeaways by Plaquemium AI Hyde. And number 9,650, Secretary of State Marco Rubio stated that a framework agreement to end hostilities with Iran could arrive within and #X27, a few days and #X27, pending finalization of specific language. Talks were underway in Doha on Tuesday with an Iranian delegation negotiating terms covering the Strait of Hormuz and Iran and #X27's stockpile of highly enriched uranium. The U.S.-Israel conflict with Iran has entered its fourth month and is producing simultaneous energy shocks, diplomatic negotiations, and structural realignment of Asian alliances affecting capital flows. The U.S.-Israel war on Iran, now entering its fourth month, has produced a geopolitical configuration that institutional capital has not priced correctly: a simultaneous energy shock, a diplomatic race against the clock, and a structural realignment of Asian alliances that will determine where trade and infrastructure capital flows for the next decade. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, speaking to reporters in Jaipur, India on Tuesday, said a framework agreement to end hostilities with Iran could arrive within a few days, contingent on finalizing specific language in an initial document. Talks were underway in Doha on Tuesday, with an Iranian delegation visiting Qatar to negotiate terms covering the Strait of Hormuz and Iran's stockpile of highly enriched uranium. Iran's central bank governor joined the delegation to discuss the potential release of frozen Iranian funds as part of a final settlement, according to Reuters, though financial terms of any deal were not disclosed. The ceasefire that has held since April 8 remains intact but fragile. U.S. Central Command confirmed its forces struck missile launch sites and boats attempting to emplace mines in southern Iran on Monday, near the port city of Bandar Abbas, citing self-defense. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps said it shot down an MQ-9 Reaper drone and fired on an RQ-4 drone and an F-35 jet. Iranian state media reported casualties and multiple explosions near Bandar Abbas, though the IRGC did not deny the U.S. strike claims. Adam Clements, a former diplomat and Pentagon official, told Al Jazeera that the tactical exchanges near Bandar Abbas do not threaten the strategic diplomacy underway. "I don't think that what's happened in the Strait of Hormuz at Bandar Abbas is inconsequential," Clements said, "but I think here's where we need to separate operational tactical matters from the strategic." He characterized formal diplomatic negotiations as still progressing despite the strikes. "The reason every sovereign wealth fund, energy trader, and infrastructure allocator should track this conflict closely comes down to one geographic choke point. The Strait of Hormuz carries roughly 20% of global oil and gas supply. Iran has effectively blocked it since the conflict began, triggering a global energy price spiral that has forced India, Japan, and every Asian import-dependent economy into acute procurement decisions. The terms of any deal, and the speed at which the strait reopens, will determine inflation trajectories, central bank policy paths, and energy infrastructure investment priorities across the Indo-Pacific for years. The war's resolution, or its continuation, is not a regional story. It is a global portfolio event. The Hormuz equation, Rubio's red line, and what it means for energy markets." Rubio's language in Jaipur was precise. "The straits have to be open," he told reporters. "They're going to be open one way or the other." He called the current situation unlawful, illegal, unsustainable for the world, and unacceptable. That framing matters for capital markets. The U.S. position is not a negotiating posture. It is a stated outcome: the strait opens, through a deal or through force. For energy traders, that binary is the key risk variable. A negotiated deal that releases frozen Iranian funds and addresses highly enriched uranium stockpiles would restore a portion of Iranian export capacity while reducing military risk premium embedded in Brent pricing. A failure of talks would sustain or escalate the naval blockade of Iran's southern ports, where the U.S. military has already been operating. In Tehran, financial markets are already pricing for a deal. Iran's national currency gained more than 5% in the week ending May 27, 2026, with the rial trading at approximately 1.73 million against the US dollar, still near an all-time low hit the prior month. The main Tehran stock exchange index climbed back above 4 million points after a controlled reopening the week prior, recovering from a collapse that followed nationwide protests in January and the approach of war. The index had peaked at approximately 4.5 million points at the start of 2026. The 5% weekly rial gain is a signal, not a resolution. The Iranian economy remains under severe pressure from a U.S. naval blockade of southern ports, the collapse of import channels through the UAE following multiple Iranian missile strikes against that country, and a near-total internet shutdown that has cost additional employment. Supply disruptions are expected to persist for at least several months, according to a Tehran-based vendor cited by Al Jazeera. Rampant inflation continues. Essential goods remain available, but prices are rising sharply. The rebuild of war-damaged industries will require substantial capital and time. Key risk variable, Iranian Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesman Esmoel Baghiayi stated that nuclear issues will only be negotiated after a framework accord is in place. This sequencing constraint means Rubio's few days timeline refers to a preliminary framework, not a comprehensive nuclear settlement. The path from framework to full deal is longer, and carries more disruption risk for energy markets. India at the pivot, Rubio's Jaipur visit and the energy trade reset. Rubio's four-day visit to India, concluding in Jaipur, was not incidental to his Iran diplomacy. It was structurally connected. India is one of the world's largest oil importers, and the Iran-triggered energy crisis has forced New Delhi into a procurement calculation it cannot resolve without engaging Washington directly. The numbers driving India's choices are straightforward. Russia supplies cheap crude, China has overtaken the US as India's largest trading partner, and Washington wants to sell India more energy supplies. Both sides indicated movement toward a broader trade deal, though specific terms were not disclosed as of publication. That triangle, Washington offering energy, Moscow offering price, and Beijing occupying trade volume, is the context in which every infrastructure and energy investment in India now sits. For private equity and institutional capital, the practical implication is a potential shift in Indian LNG terminal, pipeline, and energy storage capex toward US-aligned supply chains if a trade deal closes. Indian energy infrastructure has historically been underweighted in Western private equity portfolios relative to its import volume. A formal trade framework with Washington would de-risk that thesis. Our view, the Rubio-India energy diplomacy is a direct function of the Hormuz blockade. Iran's closure of the strait has given Washington leverage it did not previously hold over New Delhi's energy sourcing. A deal that reopens Hormuz will reduce that leverage. India should therefore be pushing for a trade deal now, before the strait reopens and Washington's bargaining power diminishes. The window for extracting concessions from Washington on tariffs and energy terms is the negotiating period, not the post-deal world. The Quad fracture, alliance capital at risk. The quadrilateral security dialogue linking the US, India, Japan, and Australia, is under structural strain that carries direct implications for defense and infrastructure capital allocation in the Indo-Pacific. Umi Ariga, an analyst at the Japan Institute for International Affairs, described the Quad foreign ministers' meeting in New Delhi as essentially damage control. The evidence supports that characterization. A planned leader-level summit last year failed to take place. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi personally invited Trump to the summit in June 2025, and as of May 2026, no date has been set. The structural pressure on the Quad comes from two directions. First, the US military operation against Iran, codenamed Epic Fury and launched on February 28, consumed more than half of pre-war US stockpiles of four critical munitions categories, according to Al Jazeera's reporting. US allies in Asia concluded from that drawdown that Washington may lack the military capacity to fulfill commitments in the Asia-Pacific while sustaining Middle East operations. Second, Trump's rapprochement with Chinese President Xi Jinping, including trade deals and what was described as the first US presidential visit to China in nearly a decade, has created strategic ambiguity about US intentions in the region. For defense-adjacent capital, the Quad's weakening is not an abstract diplomatic footnote. Japan is building up what it describes as its southern shield in direct response to declining confidence in US security guarantees. That spend has to come from somewhere, and Japanese defense procurement budgets are expanding. Australian and Indian defense capex will follow similar trajectories if the alliance deteriorates further. The China-Pakistan axis, Kuwait equity acceleration and the Qatar play while Washington and Tehran negotiate in Doha, Beijing is executing in Islamabad. Pakistani Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif completed a visit to Beijing on May 25-26, 2026, meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping and Premier Li Qiang. A joint statement issued by Pakistan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs described a new broad consensus on deepening the China-Pakistan all-weather strategic cooperative partnership. The concrete deliverables, acceleration of the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, upgrade of the 1,300-kilometer Karakoram Highway, and development of Gwadar Port as a regional connectivity hub. Financial terms for individual projects were not disclosed. The Gwadar angle is the investment thesis. Gwadar sits at the mouth of the Arabian Sea, roughly 400 kilometers from the Strait of Hormuz. A port that functions as a regional connectivity hub, with upgraded land corridors to China, represents an alternative energy and trade logistics route that partially circumvents Hormuz dependency. China's strategic interest in Gwadar as a hedge against Hormuz disruption is precisely why Beijing is accelerating the project while the strait is under Iranian closure. If the Iran deal closes and Hormuz reopens, Qatar's urgency as a bypass route diminishes. Beijing's acceleration now is timed correctly. China also formally acknowledged Pakistan's role in mediating the temporary ceasefire in the U.S.-Israel war on Iran. Pakistan's position as ceasefire mediator while simultaneously deepening its economic partnership with Beijing positions Islamabad as a diplomatic node that carries real economic value, Chinese investment in exchange for regional connectivity and political alignment. The implication, the Kuwait Equitique acceleration and Qatar development represent a parallel infrastructure capital flow that operates independently of any Iran deal outcome. Whether Hormuz reopens or not, China is building a complementary logistics corridor. For infrastructure funds, this is a theme regardless of the diplomatic resolution. Investment positioning the Iran conflict and its diplomatic endgame create a structured set of capital allocation decisions across four asset classes. Caption: Investment positioning framework derived from current diplomatic and military developments, May 2026. Sources: Al Jazeera, Reuters, AFP. Analysis: Plaquemines Holdings. The Plaquemines view: the market is treating the Iran ceasefire as a binary, deal or no deal, Hormuz open or closed. That framing misses the more durable investment signal embedded in this conflict. The real structural shift is the fragmentation of the U.S.-centric security and trade architecture in Asia. The Quad is not a diplomatic problem, it is a capital allocation signal. When the U.S. expends more than half its stockpile of four critical munitions categories in a single operation, the credibility of its extended deterrence commitments in Asia changes structurally. Japan is already drawing the correct conclusion. Taiwan has drawn it. India is hedging between Washington and Moscow for precisely this reason. This means that defense, energy, and infrastructure capital flows in the Indo-Pacific are entering a multi-vector phase, U.S.-aligned supply chains where trade deals close, Chinese-aligned infrastructure where Kuwait Equitique and BRI execute, and Russian-aligned energy where pricing wins the procurement argument. The Quad's drift toward irrelevance, combined with Trump's rapprochement with Beijing, suggests the U.S.-China bipolar framing that has governed Asia-Pacific investment theses for the past decade is being replaced by something more fragmented and more capital-intensive. For private equity and institutional capital, the second-order play is not the Iran deal itself. It is the infrastructure and defense capex cycle that the conflict has permanently accelerated. Japan's Southern Shield build-out, India's energy diversification capex, Pakistan's Qatar development, and Iran's eventual reconstruction needs represent a multi-year capital deployment opportunity that will persist regardless of whether Rubio's few days produce a framework. The Hormuz closure also reveals a structural vulnerability in global LNG and oil logistics that has been underpriced for years. Even after Hormuz reopens, the risk premium attached to strait-dependent supply chains will not fully revert. Infrastructure funds should be pricing Hormuz risk into any energy logistics asset with exposure to the Arabian Sea basin. One more read: Iran's Supreme Leader Mojtaba Khamenei, in a written statement on Tuesday, said regional countries will no longer serve as shields for American bases. Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian echoed that framing in a meeting with defense ministry officials. That language is not negotiating theater. It reflects a genuine and durable shift in the regional security architecture that will outlast any framework accord. The U.S. footprint in the Middle East is contracting at the strategic level even if it persists at the tactical one. Capital that prices the region as if 2019-era U.S. deterrence is still operative is mispriced. The bottom line: Rubio's few days is a framework deadline, not a resolution timeline. The sequencing Iran has demanded, framework first, nuclear issues second, means even a successful Doha breakthrough leaves months of negotiation ahead before Hormuz fully normalizes. Energy price risk remains elevated for the near term. The structural investment thesis is larger than the deal. The Iran conflict has accelerated three durable capital flows: Asian defense spending decoupled from U.S. guarantees, Chinese infrastructure penetration along Kuwait Equitique and Arabian Sea corridors, and Indian energy infrastructure capex driven by a forced diversification away from Hormuz-dependent supply. These flows do not reverse when the ceasefire becomes permanent. They compound. Allocators positioned in energy logistics, Asian defense, and emerging market infrastructure have the right sectors. The question is the entry point. On current data, that window closes the moment a Doha framework is announced, Hormuz reopens, and the headline risk premium compresses. The trade is now, not after the deal.